Hello, everybody.
Hello. Welcome to Audacious Aunties.
That's what I say, isn't it?
It's all right. Let's go from the. Okay, wait.
I knew it. Right, go on. Wait, okay, shall we start again? We're a minute and a half in and we've just still been trying to say the beginning bit, but you know what? I believe.
Okay, let's go.
Hello, everybody.
Hello, my name's Asia.
And my name's Asia, what happened? Oh my god, this is a bloody nightmare. Amazing.
Ready.
Okay. Hello, everybody.
Hello, my name's Asia.
And my name's Manvir, and welcome to Audacious Aunties.
Chat poetry. This is now our 9th episode.
Oh
right?
My god, it is.
Wow, I'm really impressed, and I'm just living for this season, you know?
I agree, it's been a good season, and can you believe that the next episode will be double digits? I feel like a child, you know when a child is just about to turn 10, and they're like, oh my god, my age is going to have 2 digits in it, everybody calm the hell down. That's what I feel like about this next episode of Audacious Aunties. But let's focus on today's episode. I'm really excited for you to talk this time.
Indeed.
As I am every time.
I too am excited. So we're going to be doing two different things today. The first thing we're going to be doing is talking quickly about harking it back to episode 1 of this season, mm-hmm. and talking a bit about Rumi and adding some more information and clarity to our first episode.
Definitely.
And then we'll be going on to our main artist, who, in the spirit of being a tease, I shall not yet allude to.
Can't wait.
So, on to Rumi first.
Yeah.
So, recently I was pottering along on Twitter when I saw that this account called Persian Poetics had tweeted a viral thread about the colonialization of Rumi's poetry and how it had basically been corrupted in its translation so that it took away a lot of the cultural and Islamic meaning to it.
Mm-hmm.
So one of the most popular translations of Rumi's work is by a man called Coleman Barks, who I believe we mentioned in the first episode. And whenever you see Rumi quotes floating around on the internet, or you happen to come across one without any sources, it's almost definitely a translation from Coleman Barks.
Mm-hmm.
Now, interesting, Coleman Barks didn't really have any education on the Persian language or Persian culture, or basically anything to do with that area of the world, or Rumi and his poetry.
Talk about faking it till you make it, goodness.
I know, right? Easy for white men, am I right, kids?
Totally.
And so he did get an honorary doctorate from the University of Tehran, but
that was it.
It was just through nepotism and connections that he got it. So when in the first episode I read one of his translations,
mm-hmm.
and Coleman Barks' translation was, out beyond ideas of wrongdoing and rightdoing, there is a field, I'll meet you there. Which is a very lovely translation, quite a beautiful
interpretation.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. But Persian Poetics, the person who runs this account, who actually has knowledge of the Persian language and Rumi's poetry,
mm-hmm.
Got that same bit of Persian and translated it as truly as possible.
Okay.
And did their translation. Beyond Kufr and Islam, there is a desert plain. In that middle space, our passions reign. Where the Gnostic arrives there, he'll prostrate himself. Not Kufr, not Islam. Nor is there any space in that domain.
Wow, that's a very different translation.
Yes, and you can see that Coleman Barks has essentially taken away any reference to Islam whatsoever,
yeah.
or spirituality
yeah.
in that in like a religious sense from the translation.
That's quite terrible, because the way in which we often talk about translation going from one culture to another is very much that the person who's translating is trying to not only just keep the words safe towards the culture that it was originally written in, but also to try and convey that understanding in the new culture that it's being translated to. But Coleman Barks has not done anything to respect the original culture, and this is a prime example of bad translation.
Yes, and some people have tried to defend him by saying that, oh, but his translation made Rumi's work really popular and spread wide, far and accessible. But that isn't really an excuse, because firstly, these opportunities should be going to people who are far more educated. And secondly, it's not good that it had to be heavily colonialised in order to be spread.
What is being said is that, oh, this work wouldn't be famous if it weren't for Coleman Barks. And it's like, why does there always have to be the white man trying to give the thumbs up to any kind of work that's from the non-Western world? It's horrendous.
Exactly. Now, just so that people can find, can source Rumi's work from more reliable and better translations and sources, a couple of suggestions from this Twitter user who's made all of this available. They suggested Jawed Mujaddadi's translation, which is actually the one that we have in our house, so yay.
Well done to your father.
He has the translation of the Musnavi, and then Dick Davis and Ibrahim Gamad have translation of Hafez's work and his Qatrin's, respectively.
Amazing.
So, if you're interested, Jawed Mujaddadi's work, Dick Davis and Ibrahim Gamad.
Okay. Well, thank you very much, Asiya, for highlighting that. And I like that it is being highlighted rather than being swept under the rug, because this is what this podcast is all about, really, like revisionism.
Exactly. And just to say, like, Mavi and I try our best to make sure that we're giving the best representation to each of these artists. But at the point of this podcast, as we've made clear from the beginning, is that we're also unqualified, so you're coming along on this journey with us. And if you can learn something, that's wonderful. But we have to make space to learn. And this is that in action.
I agree.
Yes. Now, on to the poet of the episode.
Oh, I'm so excited.
Okay, so today we are going to be looking at a Filipino poet. Her name is Majorie Abasco, and she was born on the island of Bohol in central Philippines in 1953, and I believe she's still alive to this day, so that's nice.
Amazing.
We love a living poet.
Is this our first poet that we've talked about who is alive?
I believe so. It's like Ken Hockman from last season.
Wow, I'm excited.
He's still alive. You've got to always have one, or maybe more, touch his nose. Anyway, so she's an award-winning Filipino poet, and she writes in two languages, English and Cebuano Visayan, which is, I believe, a dialect of the country. And she's a supporter of women's rights, especially women writers, which we stan, we love. Mm-hmm. And she's one of the earliest Filipina feminist poets.
Amazing.
So she's an iconic gal, to say the least.
We like those.
A bit about her, and she was brought up as and educated as a Roman Catholic and under the tutelage of German and Belgian nuns, which is...
That is so wild.
I know, right?
What?
Awesome stuff.
Yeah, what a diverse background.
Yeah, that's such a... I can't even... Wow.
Exactly.
So many aspects to wrap your head around as a child growing up.
Like, imagine her when she's 5 years old, and she's just, like, dawdling around, and she's like, oh my good, look at me being taught in English, but also learning about Catholicism whilst also under the guidance of German and Belgian nuns. My life couldn't get any more litter.
Exactly. And then her family moved to Manila, and she got her BA from the Divine World College of Tagbilaran. Tagbilaran. I'm really sorry if I'm mispronouncing this stuff. I'm trying my best to pronounce it correctly. And her master's degree in creative writing from Suleiman University, and then a PhD.
Wow.
So this gal be educated. She is talking business when it comes to her education. Am I right, kids? I can't even imagine being smart enough to do a master's.
Absolutely.
Not for me.
It's okay. She's doing it for us.
Yeah, exactly. She's rapping. She's rapping for us. So she wrote a poetry book called Dreamweaver's Selected Poems.
That's a lovely title.
It is, isn't it? And that was a prize-winning poetry book and her first collection. And then she wrote Okra Tones, poems in English, and Kebwano, which came out in 1999. And she's currently working on a third poetry collection, according to Wikipedia. I don't know if it's done yet.
I'm so excited. But, this is the excitement of having a poet who's still alive, you know?
So she has done a lot, has lots of accolades to her name. There's a whole section on her Wikipedia about awards that she's received.
Wow.
And there's this really... on another website, moving away from Wikipedia, we love to see it.
You are taking leaps this episode, Asya.
I know, so this is from the southeastasiaglobe.com. So it says, Vasco's poetry infuses Western imagery with the wit and irony of her literary tradition. And she is quoted having said, I don't know what I'm saying.
That hurt me.
She's quoted having said, this is actually a really beautiful quote. A poem's heart cares for and attends to its own mind and strives to sing the old stories in the face of pressures wrought in the worlds we live in at this particular time in this specific place.
Wow. That's so beautiful. There's so much to wrap my head around as well.
That quote is almost a poem in itself.
Definitely. God, she definitely does have a way with words.
Yeah. It's reading works like this and people who can just naturally say sentences that sound beautiful, you know that they have an innate talent and you're just like, wow, I aspire.
I agree. I'm very impressed. God, what a beautiful quote.
I know, right? I want to stick that up somewhere.
Yes, instead of live, laugh, love,
anybody
we should replace every one of those. Yes.
Indeed, if I'm going to tap into this now. Okay, I think that's really all I have about her life, because
that's all that Wikipedia will give you. She is living her life. God, I love it that she's alive. It makes me feel alive.
I feel alive. She seems like a proper sweetie as well. There's a little picture of her signing something. What a cutie.
Diddums. Go her.
Indeed. Okay, now on to her poem, which is for the first time. I believe I'm correct in saying that the translation is one that she has written, like she wrote it in English and in the original language.
That's so amazing.
So I'll be reading it in the English because there's no way that I'm going to try and butcher the original language. But it's very accessible on the internet. If you want to find her reading the original in the original language, you can easily find that. So I would recommend that because I listened to it earlier and it was very nice. So this poem is called Origami and it's from her collection of poetry, Dreamweavers. Mm-hmm. And I don't know, I think it's really pretty and quite pertinent for the life, the times we're living in.
Amazing. And when was this poem written?
You ask a good question. 1987.
Amazing.
Okay, origami. This word unfolds, gathers up wind to speed the crane's flight north of my sun to you. I am shaping this poem out of paper, folding distances between our seasons. This poem is a crane. When its wings unfold, the paper will be pure and empty.
Wow. That's beautiful.
Clicks.
My goodness.
Now, I won't... It is beautiful, isn't it? It's so pretty. Yeah.
There's so much to understand in her words. That's the first thing. Like, even when you read that quote, just every single word I feel that is said needs to be dissected within itself and then within the wider context of the other words.
Now, I am not going to lie. Even though she is such a wonderful poet who's clearly very big in the poetry world, it was still a struggle to find analysis of her poetry on the internet.
Okay.
So I have found one place that analyses the poem, but I cannot speak to its reliableness. But you know what? Poetry is all about interpretation, and this is just one interpretation that I found that can help us with ours. Indeed. So this analysis says that it's a poem for a loved one far away from each other, and it talks about the state of having a long distance relationship.
Fitting for the time.
And the crane is the messenger taking the message, and the instrument of their emotion towards each other and the love and hope they have for their relationship. Even though they're so far away from each other, they still believe. And this is like a really intense interpretation. So they say the speed or motion of the messenger is the same as the speed of their hope for each other.
Wow.
Which I'm not sure I fully understand what that means, but it sounds cute.
That's what it's all about.
Indeed. And then the line distances between our seasons means they're both, it could mean that they're both experiencing different seasons, that they're in different parts of the world. Which makes the sense of distance and their longing to be together even stronger. But even one way that I would think of it is that it could even mean that they're so far apart that even time has changed, that even time is different for them.
Yeah. And you always think about, especially when you're sending a message to someone who's far away, about the time in which you're writing that message, as well as the time in which it will get to them, and how the seasons might pass between that time, and how much has changed since even that message has been sent to that person and they still haven't received it.
Yeah.
It's a wrinkle in time.
Have you seen that film? I have not.
Yeah, because we're lucky enough that we got Disney Plus. Oh, you've got Disney Plus now as well, haven't you?
I just have been using it to rewatch classics. I watched Mulan yesterday.
Oh my gosh, yes. I forced Ajay to watch Mulan the other day, and he was like, there's a Mulan too. And I was like, yes, we're watching it straight after this, my child. But you know,
Mulan 2.
Oh my god, the songs in Mulan 2 are just as bopping as the songs in the original Mulan.
Really?
Yeah, I can't believe you haven't seen it.
The original Mulan is such a high caliber of song that I can't even fathom how Mulan 2 could meet it.
You know
what?
That's
amazing.
I don't think anybody was expecting them, but they delivered. It's one of the very few remakes or like second versions. Hello? You're here. Yeah, it's one of the very few sequels that has actually delivered perfectly.
Mm-hmm. So then they say, at the end of this fascinating analysis, the message is ready to be translated by the end of the poem, and the last line of the poem accomplished its purpose. So by the end of the poem, it's delivered the message, which is why its wings are empty, because the message has now been delivered, and it's ready to be rewritten on and sent back to the other lover.
Ah, I like it. I think...
That's my understanding, yeah.
I think the first thing that shook me caught my attention was the fact that it was an origami crane. And
right.
I just want to know the symbolism a bit more behind origami cranes, because they have so much resonance just in like the origami world. So for example, with what happened with Hiroshima, Nagasaki, the bombings there, origami cranes were made to commemorate that. And I don't know why, but I don't know why the crane.
An ancient Japanese legend promises that anyone who folds 1,000 original cranes will be granted a wish by a crane. Wow. Some stories believe you are granted eternal good luck instead of just one wish, such as a long life or recovery from illness or injury. This makes them popular gifts for special friends and family. The crane in Japan is one of the mystical or holy creatures. Others include the dragon and the tortoise, and it's said to live for 1,000 years. This is why 1,000 cranes are made, one for each year.
That's so cool. I love that there's a whole Wikipedia page dedicated to 1,000 origami cranes.
It's beautiful, man.
That's really cool. Okay, now that we know more context behind the cranes, I'm glad. Anyway, what caught your eye first about this poem? Like, is there a particular line that you like?
I really like, I am shaping this poem out of paper, because it's almost like, as well as the words, the crafting is also just as important. Like, everything that comes around the poem is just as important as the word itself. Like, where it's written, what it's written on, the love it's written with, the care it's sent with, that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm. I agree. Like you said, I really like the way in which she relates the poem to the crane. She does it in such a mesmerizing way that it's so that I'm almost finding it hard to wrap my head around how insanely deep this is, because she's talking about the poem and her love for this person, but then at the same time the poem is about a crane and how a crane is being made to symbolize this love and longing for that person at the same time, and the whole process of origami coming into it as well, and how within the process of origami there's a lot of love that you put into it, and neatness and tidiness, and like it's a very pure process in itself. And just, I would never have thought, well, I guess because it's not a big part of my culture, but to relate origami to love is done so well.
Yeah, it's done real well. I'm well impressed.
And I think it's beautifully captured in the line which says this poem is a crane.
So I generally rate,
thank you for that deep analysis. I also like how she has translated it herself.
Yeah, I really like that.
And, like, to some extent, it means that her words can't be tainted by anybody else, but at the same time, it must have been very hard for her herself to try and translate from one language to another. And I wonder whether or not she had any different emotions in to do with the poems in their different languages too, whether or not she preferred one translation over the other. I'd just love to know.
Yeah.
No, thank you so much, Asya. This has been really interesting. I really admire Marjorie, and I don't know why it excites me so much that she is alive, so I'll definitely look into her.
Yes, indeed.
Have some big boots to fill after Marjorie, so hopefully I will find someone of equal ability to her. Let's sign off.
We need a jingle.
Dun 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 dun.
That was lovely.
All right then, bye everybody. Thank you very much for listening.
Bye.
This audio was brought to you by Manveer Dobb and Asya Iftikhar.
We don't know much, to say the least.
But if you would like to share your thoughts, knowledge, criticisms, fan mail,
then pop us an email at audaciousaunties@gmail.com.